I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
DeLay is charged with laundering campaign money for the Republican National Committee, which would violate Texas law. The indictment comes as Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist faces a federal investigation into his sale of stock.
The grand jury has charged the Texas congressman and two political associates with conspiracy in a campaign finance scheme. DeLay says he'll step down temporarily as House Majority Leader. As required by House Republican Party rules, DeLay is largely responsible for winning passage of the Republican legislative agenda in the House.
Now let me be very, very clear. I have done nothing wrong.
The president's spokesman, Scott McClellan, says Bush still sees DeLay as an effective leader who's done good things.
Criminal conspiracy is a state jail felony punishable by 6 months to 2 years in state jail and a fine of up to $10,000.
DeLay is the highest-ranking member of Congress ever to be indicted. He says it is the result of a political witch hunt.
Now, let me be very, very clear. I have done nothing wrong.
6 months to 2 years in state jail and a fine of up to $10,000.
Good morning. That's right. It's 7 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
How you doing, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians, lurking conservatives? What a great day it is today. A Texas grand jury yesterday charged the bug-killing dwarf king of the GOP's legislative pig pack, Tom DeLay, with two political associates with conspiracy in a campaign finance scheme. He has been indicted, people. He will relinquish his post for the time being. He is charged with criminal conspiracy. Doesn't that sound good? Criminal conspiracy, which is a state felony punishable by 6 months to 2 years in jail and a fine of up to $10,000, which he could probably just get from anybody. Now, here's the great news. This is a historical fact. DeLay is the first House leader to be indicted while in office in at least 100 years. Can I say it again? Criminal conspiracy. Tom DeLay, criminal. Before I even explain to you what that is, I just want to make sure that goes into your head so you can walk around saying it all day because it sounds good. Tom DeLay indicted, criminal conspiracy. See, you know, you remember, Riley, last November the House Republicans repealed a rule requiring any of their leaders to step aside if indicted, essentially to protect this ass.
Yeah.
And then they realized that the blowback would be too extreme, so they put it back in place, and they were trying to stop exactly what is happening now, but DeLay is out for the time being, could be out for months.
Think they knew something?
Yeah, of course it. Dude, this is what? He was admonished 3 times by the Ethics Committee. He's dirty up to his neck. We're going to get into that. But let's talk about what is at stake right now in terms of what is he accused of. DeLay, John Caliandro, the executive of his political action committee, and Jim Ellis, who heads DeLay's national political committee. These two guys, Caliandro and Ellis, were indicted. This is their second indictment. They were indicted in September of 2004. Now they're getting indicted again.
Do we have a copy of the second time around by Jody Watley?
Yeah, we'll send little Goliath out to get it. Now, TRIMPAC is Texans for a Majority Political Action Committee. Okay, here's exactly what happened. I don't want to bog you down with details, but we should know. TRIMPAC accepted $155,000 from companies, all right? From companies, one of which was Sears Roebuck, and placed the money in an account. The PAC, the Political Action Committee, then wrote a check for $190,000 to an arm of the Republican National Committee and provided the Republican National Committee with a document with the names of the Texas State House candidates and the amount they were supposed to receive in donations from the RNC. The indictment included a copy of that check. So what they were doing is DeLay, Caliandro, and Ellis entered into an agreement with each other and TRIMPAC, who they were, to make a political contribution in violation of the Texas Election Code. Essentially, they were using the Republican National Committee as a money laundering place.
I would imagine, and I wonder the difference between the 155 and the 190. Is that like VIG?
Well, I don't know if it's VIG or they just wanted to make it a little different.
Build in a little for themselves.
Well,
right?
Yeah, build in a little for themselves or make it look like it wasn't a direct, you know, it wasn't here. It's the exact amount. This
yeah.
way it looks like a whole different transaction because I think they were covering for themselves. If it was the same exact amount that came into the TRIMPAC that they sent there, it would be completely suspect. They were sort of like, just add a little and they won't know it's the same chunk of money.
I'm going to tell you something. Mark, this, what's amazing about this is I really believe, and I'm speculating here, but I really believe that Tom DeLay thought that he was a genius when he figured out this scam. I think he really felt like, you know, this is the height of politics. I will transform Texas politics by doing what I have to do, intimidating who I have to intimidate. And in this case, obviously, it's Ronnie Earl. We're going to get into him a little bit later, the prosecutor in this case.
Ronnie Earl, the prosecutor, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it really is about saying, look, we are going to set this up just like all of those guys from or alleged organized crime. I don't want to upset Chris Lopresto early in the morning, but all those guys from organized crime got together and formed a commission, and they, you know, so that their business would work well. That's what DeLay did here. He said, "Look, I want to have a Republican majority, not in the Congress, but in the Texas legislature, and this is how I'm going to do it because I have a little problem with the fact that there's a law that says companies can't give direct corporate contributions to these people. So I'm going to figure out a way to get around that law.
I'm going to launder money through the Republican National Committee. I'm going to gerrymander the district." So this was part of a larger plan of him redistricting Texas,
yep,
and then running this money to these state legislators that were running in these districts.
And they absolutely, from then on, would have to be beholden to who?
Yeah. Tom DeLay. Forever. And these are Louis Gohmert, Ted Poe, Al Green, Michael McCall, Mike Conway, Kenny Marchant, and Henry Kuehler are all the guys that were at the Texas Senate, 70 representatives to Congress. That's this session. These are in direct relation to with the conspiracy at hand. A couple of them are Democrats, too. Yeah. All five Republicans joined the delegation thanks to Tom DeLay and his fundraising redistricting conspiracy. Now, are those guys, does it stink on them as well? Only in the sense that that they owe DeLay. But let me just clear this up exactly what it is. In Texas, it is illegal for political groups to take money from corporations. You can only take money from individuals. Obviously, it's okay for corporations to own politicians, but that's sort of an unspoken thing. Yeah. DeLay and his buddies took money from corporations, then funneled it through the RNC in Washington, then brought it back to Texas in order to finance their redistricting campaign. DeLay is charged with criminal conspiracy. Criminal conspiracy, which means he is not charged with using money improperly, but he is charged with agreeing with others to use money improperly. It may be a lesser charge, but it is a serious charge with a catchy name. Criminal conspiracy is what Tom DeLay is indicted for. The president is doing what he's been doing lately when confronted with reality and dissent and corruption in his own ranks. And he's saying, basically,
"You're doing a great job, Tom."
He says he doesn't want to stink on me. Translated to, quote, "We need to let the legal process work." End quote, from Scott McClellan yesterday. Now, obviously, what was even more encouraging about what is happening right now is that Tom DeLay isn't the only one. The Republican power structure at the highest, I mean, you know, we have the majority leader in the House, and then we have the Senate leader, Bill Frist.
Bill Frist is running away from a little stock deal.
Well, it just went up. I mean, it was an investigation, and as of this morning, it is now an inquiry. No, the other way around. It was an inquiry. Now it's an investigation.
Kind of upgraded like hurricane.
Exactly. The change came, and I think the reason we talked about it yesterday, this is around his family's company, HCA, a for-profit healthcare
hospital chain.
Hospital chain. The change apparently came as revelations about insiders at HCA. We knew that they all sold their stock off. Mm-hmm. But apparently, not only did they sell their stock off, but when they were selling their stock off, they were telling the outsiders,
"Everything's great."
Exactly. So that stinks. Yeah. You know? So he is now under investigation by the SEC. And we have Jack Abramoff, of course, a Republican super lobbyist. This is the guy. He is at the center of a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's very few people in the Congress, of the Republican Congress, that are in some way affiliated with or connected to Jack Abramoff or Tom DeLay. This is the interesting question that we're going to get into later, is what's going to happen now? Even if DeLay is out temporarily out of that leadership position, how much of these guys, how many of them are so afraid of DeLay they won't do anything, and how many of them are going to see this as an opportunity and start gunning for that hole? You know what I'm saying?
If you're a politician, this should be a gift from God.
So I just to make a quick list of the crime docket here, we got Tom DeLay, you know, indicted. We got Bill Frist under investigation. We got Jack Abramoff indicted. We got David Safavian, the president's chief procurement officer, who had to step down 2 weeks ago because he was arrested on charges of lying to investigators and obstructing a separate federal investigation into Abramoff's dealings. We've got Michael Brown, of course, resigned earlier this month because he's incompetent and a fool. We've got, of course, we've got got Karl Rove and Scooter Libby. That's ongoing. That's a federal investigation. That thing, those guys should be indicted. But these are not partisan things. That is a misnomer, and that is obviously how they're going to spin it. DeLay is going to characterize Ronnie Earl, the guy who prosecuted him, the chief prosecutor out there in Texas, who brought this upon him. Obviously, the judge did.
Remember, this was, and this is interesting, because with DeLay slamming Ronnie Earl for all of this, the foreman of the grand jury said, Ronnie Earl didn't indict Tom DeLay. We indicted Tom DeLay.
Right. And here Tom DeLay is calling Ronnie Earl this partisan freak, this fanatic. But you know what? We're going to tell you who Ronnie Earl is. This is a guy that has a reputation of integrity. He's not a guy that has ever been accused of shooting from the hip or acting without a very decisive plan. He's been his reputation is solid. He's been reputed to be a very moral guy and a very deliberate, but yet, you know, he plans. He's meticulous. So this didn't come out of nowhere. And he has indicted plenty of Democrats in his time as a Democrat, and we're going to go into that in just a second. We'll give you a little information about who Ronnie Earl is. Again, Tom DeLay has been indicted for criminal conspiracy. We're going to be talking about this all day, obviously. It's a very exciting day. It's 17 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
Twenty-one past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
Tom DeLay, House Majority Leader, indicted, criminal conspiracy, a felony, a state felony in Texas. Could do time, up to 2 years, 6 months to 2 years in jail. There's a fine of $10,000, perhaps, but he is indicted, and he's out. He's out. His seat is now being filled by another criminal. Representative Roy Blunt.
Wait a minute, alleged. Is he going to jail?
No,
did he do time?
No, but look at him. He stinks. They all stink. The toxic smell is upon them. What a glorious morning it is. The smell of Republican stink emanating from Washington all the way up here to New York. I can smell it. What is it? Fecund? Is that the word?
Fecund, yes.
Is that a good word?
Fetid.
I think that's the word I'm looking for. Fetid, I think. Yeah, both F's and both alliterative. You know, fecund. You know what? Let's not get into poetry or English 101. Let's listen to Tom DeLay defending himself. I want you to know that when I watch this statement by Tom DeLay, accusing District Attorney Ronnie Earl of Texas of being a partisan. When I heard this, I thought, man, the bravado, the nads of this guy, to be so brazen. What a perfect thing this is going to be when he goes to jail. It just reeked of one of those sound bites where you're like, if he goes to jail, they are never going to stop playing this thing. I thought it was just tremendous, because I looked at it and it almost seemed to be like it was designed for that. Because if he goes to jail and they play this, how amazing will it be?
This act is the product of a coordinated, premeditated campaign of political retribution, the all-too-predictable result of a vengeful investigation led by a partisan fanatic.
Now, then he went on to say, "It's like, I'm not guilty." You know, it was just one of those, I am not a crook speeches. Now, let's talk about District Attorney Ronnie Earl. He has been a DA for a million years.
Since 1976, he is an elected Democrat. He is based in Austin, which is significant because the prosecutor that is based in the Texas State Capitol has inordinate clout, even more clout than the DAs, for example, in Houston or in Dallas or many other of the larger cities. So Ronnie Earl has always been someone who has been a very, very public figure. He went after 15 elected officials in his tenure. 12 of them have been Democrats.
This is a guy that he just doesn't like when people are dirty. He doesn't like when people are doing wrong. He's one of those guys that is almost too moral. You know, you read what statements people make about him, that he's just a meticulous, very deliberate, but does not, rush anything. He's a sort of moral standard holder, which in some lights can, be sort of a negative trait to some, but nonetheless, this guy has nothing, he's got, he's just a, he's an honest cat. You know, this isn't a partisan attack. That is clear because, in, you know, 12 Democrats. He went after 12 Democrats, Riley, three Republicans. He went after the Texas Supreme Court Justice Don Yarborough, who was sentenced to 5 years for lying to a grand jury in forgery. He went after Texas State Representative Mike Martin, a Republican, pleaded guilty to perjury after lying about having himself shot to gain publicity. By the way, the Texas is a great place.
Texas, isn't it, though?
Yeah, yeah, still a bunch of yahoos and cowboys down there in Texas, but in a good way sometimes. Texas Supreme Court Justice Don Yarborough, by the way, Democrat. State Treasurer Warren Harding, Democrat.
No relation to the former president, I hope.
Who would name their kid that?
Warren Harding, the most incompetent president before this one.
So so this guy was a Democrat in 1982. He pleaded no contest to official misconduct and dropped a re-election bid. Attorney General Jim Maddox, a Democrat in 1985, he was acquitted on felony bribery charges. House Speaker Gib Lewis, a Democrat in 1992. These are all the people that District Attorney Ronnie Orles went after. It, in a way here, just to prove to you, that, and I'm sure the people that are listening, most of you know, that, that this is not a partisan attack. It is something that Tom DeLay had coming. And everybody knew it. People, Republicans knew it. They all knew it. I mean, you're talking about like Chris Shays, a Republican senator from Connecticut, once said of Tom DeLay, quote, Tom's conduct is hurting the Republican Party. It is hurting this Republican majority. It is hurting any Republican who is up for re-election. My party is going to have to decide whether we are going to continue to make excuses for Tom to the detriment of Republicans seeking election, end quote. That's a Republican. That's Christopher Shays. That's a senator from Connecticut.
Congressman from Connecticut. And guest on the show, remember?
Yep. The thing is that the stink has been on this guy for a long time, and what you have here is you have him, the rap sheet is ongoing. This guy's been accused or assumed to have done, he's offered political favors in exchange for a vote. He tried to bribe somebody, basically, supposedly. He's supposedly been involved in improperly involving a federal agency in a Texas partisan matter. DeLay ordered the Homeland Security Department to help Texas Rangers chase down Democratic state legislators.
When they ran to Oklahoma.
And they were in that hotel.
Yep.
Yeah, they were like, you know, we're not doing it. We're not involved in this.
This is all part of the same scam.
Using his children's charity as a personal political fund.
Ooh.
That's a charge. It's not been proved, but the stink is on this guy. Now he's been indicted criminal conspiracy, friends. Criminal conspiracy. Now we're going to talk about what is going to happen in the House.
Yes.
What, this jockeying for power. How on the same page are all these guys? We're going to get into that in a second. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
He's one of the most powerful men in Washington.
It's beneath contempt.
Famous for his aggressive bare-knuckle style of politics.
If we do not act, she will die of thirst.
Tom DeLay faces investigations in Washington and Texas.
It's a philosophy built on values that are moral, universal,
and I believe the source of our greatness.
Government watch groups are stepping up their calls for Tom DeLay to resign his post as majority leader.
The abuses we've seen in recent days do not reflect the views, policies, or fabric of this nation.
$57,000 all-expense-paid trip may have been funded by lobbyists, which is against the rules.
Is it ethical?
Three of DeLay's associates have been indicted.
Accusations of illegal campaign fundraising and improper ties to lobbyists.
We have the truth on our side.
Third DeLay trip that has been called into question.
And it is the truth.
Connection with illegal fundraising.
That will win us this argument.
Two campaign organizations that financed his re-election paid $500,000 to his wife and daughter.
Is it ethical?
I feel great about it.
It's a philosophy built on values that are moral and the certain knowledge that we are all ultimately responsible for our actions.
That's right. It's 35 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. A Texas grand jury yesterday charged the bug-killing dwarf king of the GOP's legislative pig pack, Tom DeLay, and two political associates with conspiracy in a campaign finance scheme. He's been indicted, people. He will relinquish his post for the first time. He will relinquish his post for the time being is what I meant to say. And what I wanted to say is that this is the first House leader in 100 years to be indicted while in office. How do you like that? Criminal conspiracy is the charge. It's a state felony punishable by 6 months to 2 years in jail with a fine of up to $10,000. We're going to talk about the scramble and the infighting and jockeying to fill that seat temporarily that really reveals the fact
that the legislators,
the GOP legislators in the Congress are not all on the same page. It's an incredible opportunistic festival for those who don't owe their lives to delay. We'll talk about that in a second. But sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. From CNN. Bush tours. Every time. From CNN, Bush tours Rita damaged Texas and Louisiana. Bush tours Rita damaged Texas, Louisiana. Translation, reluctant Bush eats spinach. wait. Let's do another one. Bush tours Rita damaged Texas and Louisiana. Translation, Bush visits the graveyard of his legacy. Those are touching. Yeah, those are powerful ones, not necessarily big laughers. From Money Magazine, number of new millionaires sets record. Number of new millionaires sets record. Translation, final score, haves 1 million, have-nots zero. Yes. From Seattle Times, Laura Bush to appear on Extreme Makeover, Home Edition. Laura Bush to appear on Extreme Makeover, Home Edition. Translation, Laura Bush to appear on Extreme Makeover, Approval Polls Edition. Approval polls edition. All right, so let's talk about what is going on in the great gap that is the seat that Tom DeLay has had to let go of. You know, they tried about a year ago, Riley, you know this, they tried a year ago to change the law, to repeal the procedure that would enable him to stay there. They were going to say that even if a guy was indicted, even if a House leader was indicted, he could keep his seat. And then they realized that people would be like, wait a minute, what, who the hell you guys think you are?
Hey, let me tell you something. Yeah. There are enough conservatives in the House of Representatives who have drunk Tom DeLay's Kool-Aid that yesterday, when they met to talk about who was going to succeed him, they were talking about possibly bringing him back before his trial was over.
Now, what does that look like to you? Now, drinking the Kool-Aid, I think that this guy's got a dossier on all of them. I think he's got dirt. I think he is tied in with Abramoff, the lobbyist who is also under indictment, and a lot of other guys are, and a lot of them are tied in with DeLay. So this dirty money has got to at least seep into the pockets of probably two-thirds of the House. There's only got to be a few of them, these Republicans, that can actually have the freedom to jockey right now.
Well, let me tell you something. Right now, I would not want to be Roy Blunt, the guy who is apparently going to take DeLay's seat. And when I say seat, not his seat in Congress. We're talking now about his seat as majority leader, the temporary majority leader. Let me tell you about Roy. Well, we don't have to go into great detail about Roy Blunt.
Well, let's go into some.
All right. First of all, he and his family are all in the pocket of Philip Morris. All right. His son is a lobbyist for Philip Morris. He tried to attach something to a bill early on. It was unsuccessful. That would have directly benefited Philip Morris.
Well, let's not let him off that easy. Let's do some character assassination, Riley.
Okay.
We have the opportunity here.
All right.
In 2003, Blunt divorced his wife of 31 years.
Oh, you're going to go there. See,
yeah,
you're
sure.
Go, never mind the tobacco stuff. You're going to go to the juicy part.
But yeah, but it's all connected. He divorces his wife of 31 years. This is Roy Blunt. This is Representative Roy Blunt, the Republican from Missouri. Yeah, Kent Jones, like, no good. Obviously, first elected to Congress in 96, and he has been voted. I don't know if it's a vote, but he is one of the 13 most corrupt members of Congress. That was according to Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. By the way, it's a bipartisan list of representatives, okay?
Ethics and what?
He's one of the most corrupt members in Congress. This is Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Yeah, I know. That's fun. Yeah, it's got a punchline. Ethics
that's
in Washington.
Hilarious.
All right, so here we go. Blunt divorces his wife of 31 years to marry Philip Morris lobbyist Abigail Perlman.
Yeah.
Before it was known publicly that Blunt and Perlman were dating, and only hours after becoming majority whip, he tried to secretly insert a provision into Homeland Security legislation that would have benefited Philip Morris.
Philip Morris.
So I don't know.
Where his son is a lobbyist.
Yeah, so it goes both ways. So she apparently got the kid the job,
yep.
And since she's going to be sleeping
and
with
she
him.
She got the job.
Yeah, exactly. Give me Additionally, yeah, exactly. Philip Morris' parent company, Altria, is Blunt's largest campaign contributor. Now, Blunt also has ties to lobbyist Jack Abramoff, who was the subject of criminal and congressional probes and indicted. In June 2003, Abramoff persuaded DeLay to organize a letter co-signed by Hastert, Blunt, and others that endorsed a view of gambling law benefiting Abramoff's client, the Louisiana Coushatta, by blocking gambling competition by another tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that ended up in some guy getting murdered.
Yeah, it did.
You know, that.
Now, mind you, we can't say that any of these people had anything to do with the murder, but we do have the fact that somebody that was in the middle of all of that wound up dead.
Yeah, in the gambling, the owner of the casino.
Casino, yeah.
Now, look, this is, it's all very, you know, it, there's a lot of different investigations. There are obviously indictments. I mean, Bill Frist has been, he's been upped a level. He's no longer just a, it's not an inquiry, it's an investigation.
Category 4 investigation.
That's right, for insider trading. You got two guys right there in the White House, Karl Rove and Scooter Libby, are being investigated by a federal prosecutor, right? Federal grand jury. Now, what you're seeing here is that, you know, President Bush is going to have to distance himself from everyone in the Republican Party.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And see, remember that all of these people are supposed to be about the business of driving the Bush agenda. You heard anybody talk about Social Security lately? That shows you how badly they're doing
their
jobs.
That's over.
He has nobody left in Congress who can be effective in moving forward. I mean, I don't even think the estate tax can get done. But you know what is going to be the central question here? Can the Democrats actually move for an independent investigation of Hurricane Katrina by taking advantage of the leadership vacuum that currently exists among House Republicans?
Well, we're going to get into that in detail in just a second. What I want to talk to you about, Riley, is what unfolded from what you've assessed here, what you gleaned from some of the information we're looking at. What unfolded yesterday? Why was it that we heard that David Dreyer of California, the Representative David Dreyer of California, a conservative, a Republican, a friend and facilitator of Arnold Schwarzenegger out there.
An anti-gay,
possibly gay man.
Yes.
Now, yesterday there were reports coming out that he was the guy that was going to sit in DeLay's chair, but then Roy Blunt apparently went right up to Denny Hastert.
He went to Denny Hastert directly and lobbied for the promotion himself, and there were a block of conservatives among this House caucus that didn't want to hear about David Dreyer. And here's part of the reason why. I'll show you how all of these people are all hooked up with each other. David Dreyer's chief of staff is a guy named Brad Smith. Now, Karl Rove is one of the highest paid people underneath the top level of government in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Smith, Dreyer's chief of staff, only makes $400 a year less than Karl Rove.
Huh.
Yeah. Or $400 a year less than Andrew Card.
Can I do some character assassination?
Sure, go
ahead. Raw story. Okay, Ross, right. Not necessarily a valid source, but nonetheless a source, and I will cite them because I don't want to slander, you know, indiscriminately. Raw Story reports that that Dreyer lives with his chief of staff.
Yeah, there has been that report. They have also, and see, you know, Hustler Magazine got up in the middle of this too about a year or so ago, where they were saying that the media in and around Dreyer's district had hidden the fact that the man was reportedly gay.
Yeah, now I don't have any problem. Obviously, we're not using that as some sort of indictment, but he is lying about it, and we do think that it might have had something to do with the conversations around who gets to sit in DeLay's chair. Now, Denny Hastert is a completely sort of powerless House Speaker. DeLay is the guy that runs everything.
Yep.
So Roy Blunt, who is DeLay's guy, he is the majority whip. He's the guy that does the dirty work for DeLay. Probably got the okay from DeLay. Hastert talked to DeLay, and he got pushed through. I just don't know. How did they pick Dreyer to begin with? How did that happen, Riley?
I don't know. You know, there are a number of reasons. I think part of it was that Dreyer still had a little political capital left because he did, in fact, lead the recall against California Governor Gray Davis, which was considered a turning point in Republican politics. Certainly on the West Coast. To get Arnold Schwarzenegger, a Republican, to be governor of a blue state was a heck of an accomplishment. And this guy was up in the middle of all that. And he was reliable in voting along the president and conservative issues on a lot. lot. He voted for the Marriage Protection Act in July. He's voted for a lot of issues that a lot of these conservatives agree with.
So bottom line is he probably wasn't dirty enough in the way that they're used to. You know, the thing that I'm seeing here is that most of that House of Representatives, most of these Republicans, they are being held together, primarily many of them, out of fear of delay or because they owe delay a favor. Delay is the evil glue that holds that legislative body together. And the ones that aren't dirty with delay money are probably looking for ways to exploit the opening. And I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see a fragmentation of the House because of this absence. I mean, that's the best we can hope for, is that these guys start fighting amongst themselves.
Yeah, and see, the other thing, and you're going to hear this later on today, Mark, that Dreyer was pushed aside in part because he chairs the Rules Committee, which is a very powerful House committee, and they didn't want to change leaders in midstream. That's going to be the public line in all of this, to cover the fact that there were all of these questions that conservatives had, apparently, about Dreyer's sexuality.
Again, if you're just tuning in and you didn't watch any television last night, because I assume that some people have other things to do.
Some people watching a game.
That's right. Like, you know, put the little Goliath on. Like, you know, while I was
dreaming,
I was jumping up and down last night that Delay got indicted. I'm just curious. And Dave, this is Dave, our half-paid intern, little Goliath. Little Goliath is about 9 feet tall. Don't lie. What were you doing last night?
Last night? Yeah. I was watching Apocalypse Now.
Okay. See?
Oh, okay.
But I will say this, though. Yeah. I was checking my email, and I got an email from Dan Pashman.
Yeah.
And I went on CNN, and I actually did see it last night.
That Tom DeLay.
Tom DeLay, yeah.
And then, so you saw it, and then how long between seeing it and going back to Apocalypse Now?
30 seconds.
Well, I tried to, I have a Mac, so I tried to, you know, see video footage of it, but my Mac wasn't compatible with the website, so I couldn't watch anything. Oh. I tried to check out an article and read about it.
How'd that go? How did you get
it? It was
all the
hard getting through.
Okay. We'll be back in a second with the Democrats. What are the Democrats going to do? It's 47 past the hour, Air America Radio's Mornings Edition.
Mornings Edition.
Just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Fifty-two past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Morning Sedition is heading to New Jersey. We'll be broadcasting live from Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey, next Friday, October 7th. Stay tuned for details on that. You can always email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com. You can podcast Morning Sedition. You can go to morningsedition.com to learn more about that, because that is one of the only ways you can hear us on the West Coast, unless you are an insomniac. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Tom DeLay has been indicted on one count of criminal conspiracy and has been forced to relinquish his House leadership post. Insiders say the majority leader made the decision to step aside after learning that President Bush was sending FEMA in to rescue him. DeLay said he was just taking a temporary departure, but for a change, Jack Abramoff isn't going to pay for it. Historians say DeLay is the first House leader to be indicted while in office in at least a century. Truly a dark day for the Confederacy. The Democrats have no unified strategy, which we'll talk about in a minute, for confronting Republican incompetence on natural disasters. According to our best estimate, Democrats lack a strategy for dealing with the Republicans' lack of a strategy. An airliner in the Philippines was grounded for 13 hours because of a mouse on board the plane. Flight crews tried everything to catch the mouse, including the usually reliable method of painting a mouse hole over a solid wall and watching him run into it. Al-Qaeda later issued a statement claiming responsibility for the mouse. Today's phrase just dropped into conversation. Michael Brown says he didn't do anything wrong. Tom DeLay says he didn't do anything wrong. Wake up, sheeple. The people in power blame all their mistakes on the people out of power. Those are the Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. We're going to have Democratic Congressman Maxine Waters by the phone from D.C. in a little while. Jim Moore, the author of Bush's Brain, is going to share with us in our celebration of Tom DeLay's at least almost downfall. Certainly an indictment is good. It's meaty. It's definitely going to stick whether or not he is actually put in jail or convicted. It doesn't make any difference. This is something that Republicans and Democrats alike have seen coming for a long time, and it's going to be the theme of today. I mean, I'd be excited to talk to Jim. I want to hear Jim happy.
Oh, yeah.
And then later in the show, for those of you who don't care, his name is David Joachim. David Joachim, the author of Tailgater's Cookbook, is going to join us live in studio, and we'll bring Pashman in here for that. That's much later in the hour. You know, people always write the show, Riley, and they say things like, you know, I can't believe I turned it on, and they were talking about iPods. Mm. It's like, you know, you can't hold us responsible because you tune in at the wrong 15 minutes, folks. We talk
about
that
could be the right 15 minutes for some person.
Well, that's right, but, you know, you can't please everybody.
Work for me.
And I'll tell you, that iPod segment, despite you, we did get one email from a guy going, who the hell is this chick to tell us, you know, what to put on our iPod? Yeah, but right. I tell you, there's a lot of interesting suggestions in there, but that's not the case. I'm just speaking to those people who are unable to have a good time or relax a little bit, even in the midst of these dark days. Today we have celebration, we have Tom DeLay being indicted, and later we're going to have grilling, okay?
Grilling, yeah,
that's right,
go.
We're going to talk about grilling. And Riley?
Well, you know, there are a lot of things that are coming out of this DeLay indictment. My major question is, are the Democrats really prepared to take advantage of this? There is a problem, I think, in terms of Democratic unity, just trying to get something positive out of this, politically speaking.
Yeah. Now, we got a minute here. I want you to tell me about the passing of...
The passing of a civil rights pioneer, Judge Constance Baker Motley, civil rights lawyer, federal judge, first black woman to serve as a federal judge. She was the first black woman to serve in the New York State Senate. She was also the first woman to be Manhattan Borough President. She had an incredible career. She died at the age of 84. She was one of the people who directed the campaign to get James Meredith into the University of Mississippi. Mm. Charlene Hunter Gault, who later went to the wrote for the New York Times and was in PBS, got her into the University of Georgia. She had an incredible impact on black women, including my sister, who decided to become a lawyer largely because my mother was such a big fan of Judge Motley.
Now, this is a woman who stood with Martin Luther King.
Yes.
She stood with Medgar Evers, right?
Yes. Actually, she spent time with Medgar Evers trying to register blacks in Mississippi just before Medgar Evers was murdered for doing so.
84 years old.
84 years old.
That is a good run.
That is a life well lived.
And an inspiration. So your sister's a lawyer.
My sister is the civil chief of the U.S. Attorney's Office in Brooklyn.
Wow.
You never know.
You've got a family of civil servants. Your son is at the elections, board of elections. And you hear talk about politics. You have a little more freedom than the other ones
in
your family.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely.
We can mix it up a little bit.
Yeah.
So at the top of the hour, the celebration of Tom DeLay's indictment continues. We will talk about the Democrats, whether they have a strategy or just going to sit around and wait, which they really can't. Because these midterm elections coming up are important. We have to make sure that this stink stays on all of the Republicans who are running for re-election and that they do get up off their butts and do something. It's 57 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
DeLay is charged with laundering campaign money to the Republican National Committee, which would violate Texas law. The indictment comes as Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist faces a federal investigation into his sale of stock.
The grand jury has charged the Texas congressman and two political associates with conspiracy in a campaign finance scheme. DeLay says he'll step down temporarily as House Majority Leader. As required by House Republican Party rule, DeLay is largely responsible for winning passage of the Republican legislative agenda in the House.
Now let me be very, very clear.
I have done nothing wrong.
The president's spokesman, Scott McClellan, says Bush still sees DeLay as an effective leader who's done good things.
The criminal conspiracy is a state jail felony punishable by 6 months to 2 years in the state jail and a fine of up to $10,000.
DeLay is the highest-ranking member of Congress ever to be indicted. He says it is the result of a political witch hunt.
Now let me be very, very clear. I have done nothing wrong.
6 months to 2 years in state jail and a fine of up to $10,000.
That's right, people. That is absolutely right, folks. It's 7 past the hour. You're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Yeah.
Talk America Radio's Morning Sedition program. A Texas grand jury yesterday charged the bug-killing dwarf king of the GOP's legislative pig pack, Tom DeLay, and two political associates, thugs, with conspiracy in a campaign finance scheme. He's been indicted, folks. He will relinquish his post for the time being. He is charged with criminal conspiracy, which is a state felony punishable by 6 months to 2 years in jail and a fine of up to $10,000. Important to note here, Riley, DeLay is the first House Speaker to be indicted while in office in at least 100 years. Criminal conspiracy, my friends.
Since back in the day.
And the two guys that he's with here, John Caliandro and Jim Ellis, John Caliandro was the executive director of DeLay's political action committee, and Jim Ellis was the head of DeLay's national political committee. Those guys were indicted back in September 2004. This is their second indictment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you'll recall, folks, last November, House Republicans repealed a rule requiring any of their leaders to step aside if indicted. This was essentially to protect Tom DeLay, who had been admonished by the Ethics Committee 3 times. He's filthy, folks. He's been filthy for years. This is a guy that has been accused of using his children's charity as a personal political fund. He's been accused of illegally laundering corporate funds to assist state political campaigns, which is what this indictment is about. He's been accused of offering political favors in exchange for a vote. He's been accused of taking at least 4 separate trips costing over $250,000 paid for by lobbyists who wanted to influence legislation. This guy's a filthy ex-exterminator, and now he's finally been indicted. Let me just say that they couldn't repeal that House rule because of the political backlash. So they reinstated the rule to make sure that they wanted. It was so weird because this is how powerful Tom DeLay is. He says, look, I want a rule protecting me if I get indicted. I don't want to have to leave my job. And they're like, okay, Tom, whatever.
Whatever.
And then all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute, this could hurt us.
Yeah.
And we've got to meet Tom halfway here. What are we going to do? So they put the rule back, and now he's been indicted, so he's got to step aside. Roy Blunt of Missouri is stepping in. But here's the deal. DeLay, John Caliandro, is executive director of TRIMPAC, Texans for a Majority Political Action Committee, and Jim Ellis, who heads DeLay's National Political Committee, as I said before. Here's what happened. TRIMPAC accepted $155,000 from companies, one of which was Sears Roebuck, and placed the money in an account. The Political Action Committee then wrote a check for $190,000 to an arm of the Republican National Committee and provided the Republican National Committee with a document with the name of Texas State House candidates and the amount they were supposed to receive in donations. This is also during the whole redistricting of Texas. This was a big plan on behalf of Tom DeLay and perhaps Karl Rove to make it almost impossible for Democrats to hold the state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what happens. The indictment included a copy of that check that they wrote to the Republican National Committee because DeLay, Caliandro, and Ellis entered into an agreement with each other and the Political Action Committee to make a political contribution in violation of Texas election code. What they did was they essentially took this money donated by companies, funneled it through, laundered it through the Republican National Committee, and then distributed it to candidates. And in other words, in Texas, it is illegal for political groups to take money from corporations. You can only take money from individuals. It is okay for corporations to own politicians, but that's really a different conversation. DeLay and his buddies took money from corporations and funneled it through the RNC in Washington, but brought it back to Texas.
Allegedly.
All right. I know. Allegedly, in order to finance the redistricting campaign, DeLay is charged with criminal conspiracy, which means he is not charged with using money improperly, but he is charged with agreeing with others to use money improperly. It may be a lesser charge, but it is a serious charge. It's got a catchy name. And if that's anything you bring with you today, criminal conspiracy is all you need.
It's got a catchy name called felony.
Exactly. Now, of course, the president, who is having to distance himself from just about every Republican... Yeah, right. Scott McClellan said for the president, quote, we need to let the legal process work, end quote. It's just like him saying, you know, with Rove and Libby, being investigated right behind him, down the hall, saying, I don't know what happens the hall.
Look, it's coming down to where Congressman DeLay's on the phone. Well, take a message. Senator Frist on the phone, take another message.
That's just it. I think it's important to know. It's important to know and realize just how much of the power structure, the upper-level power structure of the GOP, of the Republican machine, is either, you know, being indicted, under investigation, almost indicted. I mean, Bill Frist, they just raised the ante on that. The SEC is no longer, it's not an inquiry, it's an investigation into insider trading. In insider trading, it's a formal investigation into his family's company.
Yeah, his family's company, HCA, a for-profit hospital chain that reportedly provides abortions, despite the fact that Frist has gone before virtually every anti-abortion group in America to state his opposition. But we'll let that lay for the moment. The question I have, Mark, is whether or not the Democrats are properly positioned to take political advantage of all this. Now, that may seem like a very crass thing to say in the wake of people's legal troubles, but the fact of the matter is the Democrats need to use this as an issue to promote real reform. Reform that doesn't let people put 6,000 amendments onto a highway bill to benefit their local constituencies. Something that will have an independent commission to look at what happened with Hurricane Katrina. It's all related because it's all about reforming the way Washington does its business.
Well, it seems that they've got it now. I mean, half of these guys are being investigated or under indictment. What needs to happen for them to step up? I know that there's some momentum in the House to get this independent commission to look into the aftermath of Katrina. Our friend Benny Thompson is involved with Bob Menendez of New Jersey and Louise Slaughter of New York to try to use protocol to bypass House rules in order to get this on the docket there.
Yeah.
But they need, 218?
They need 218 votes. They're not sure they got them. But this little vacuum that's been created by DeLay's situation may actually help them.
Well, what have they got to do? Now, I mean, not just for Katrina, but why can't they just start saying, look at this disaster? Why can't they start materializing on this in the promotional sense that, Bill Frist is going down. We got Tom DeLay going down. We got Libby and Rove that are under investigation. I mean, Riley? It's a frustrating. We talked about it last night on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, what is it with this Democratic Party that they can't be even a quarter as organized in distributing their talking points, their points of view, getting access to media, getting all on the same page, and creating a momentum in the face of some of the biggest corruption since Watergate, for God's sake, since Iran-Contra here? We've got some real stuff going on, and the Democrats are still sort of fragmented. Why?
Well, because they have their own issues to deal with. They don't see themselves as a unified bloc. Half of them are still pissed off that Howard Dean is head of the DNC. If they were smart, this is what they do. They get people like Olympia Snowe from Maine.
Yeah.
They get people like Chris Shays from Connecticut, Republican, moderate Republicans. You get with them and you say, look, we are going to push through something to stop this sea of corruption, because Shays and them don't like it. They don't like to hear Shays was one of Michael Brown's biggest critics on the Hill the other day. That you can work with those people, get together with those people, make some real reform, put it forward as a package of legislation, and run on it next year.
Okay, well, let's say this. Christopher Shays, a Republican congressman from Connecticut, he's a guy that's very critical of this administration, clearly does not owe his life to Tom DeLay. There are Republicans in the House that aren't, they don't owe their loyalty to Tom DeLay. They may not be dirty with Tom DeLay's money. The stink may not be on them. What is it that's stopping a group like Menendez and Slaughter and Benny Thompson and some of these other representatives, these Democratic representatives, from reaching out across the aisle to these guys that are disenchanted at the very least and angry about the Republican organization right now and getting the number they need to get some momentum going?
Well, part of the problem is that they don't have a program yet. They have got to have a program. They have got to say, this is what we're going to push legislation that would A, ease the bankruptcy bill, B, see to it that some of this highway money, $24 billion of it that's going for pork, put it to Katrina.
See,
do some of these other things that are concrete signs of reform in the way Washington does its business. It's no accident that Roy Blunt married a K Street lobbyist in D.C.
So I dig what you're saying. So what you're saying is that, you know, what they should do is take advantage now. Instead of just being, you know, character assassinating or slandering and, or kicking them when they're down, is to take advantage of the chaos within the GOP's House, GOP's representative.
That's right.
And say, look, you know, we've got common interests here. You know, they dropped the ball on this hurricane relief, and we need to facilitate some stuff that will enable our constituents, people of this country, to live better lives and to trust our government a little more. And I think we have common cause with some of you guys on the other side
of
the aisle.
On the other side, yeah.
So it'll take some clever and earnest politicking on behalf of some, not ambitious, but concerned and thorough Democrats to take these actions on a small scale and maybe not publicize it because they're afraid of that. Hopefully that'll happen. We're going to talk to Maxine Waters in a little while, the Democratic Congresswoman from Los Angeles. And we've got radio theater coming up, so we'll talk to her a little bit about some of this stuff. So I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to radio theater in a matter of minutes at 17 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it, eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Sedition old-time radio players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
This week, travel into the unknown on the Morning Sedition X-Files.
Riley, thank God I found you, man. This is going to sound crazy, but I was abducted by aliens last night.
Okay, take it easy, Mark. What's the last thing you remember?
Well, all right, I was on the examination table, and I was surrounded by all these strange little men, and I'm pretty sure I was probed.
Oh, that. You weren't abducted by aliens. You were just in a gay midget porn video.
What?
Yeah, someone slipped you a roofie and took you someplace in the Bronx. Here, I've got a copy.
We represent the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild, and in the name of the Lollipop Guild.
Oh, my God. I finally hit bottom.
Not yet. That's coming up in this part.
Say my name, bitch.
Ow! Stop hurting me.
Oh.
This has been The X-Files on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Oh, no.
Wow.
23 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
We are on the Morning Sedition program. We are sharing in the love and sharing in the excitement of a Texas grand jury yesterday charging the bug-killing dwarf king of the GOP's legislative pig pack, Tom DeLay, House Majority Leader, and two political associates with conspiracy, criminal conspiracy. That is a felony, a state felony punishable by 6 months to 2 years in jail and a fine of up to $10,000. We're going to talk to Congresswoman Maxine Waters in D.C., L.A., Los Angeles. Congresswoman Maxine Waters will tell us what she thinks of that. And then we got a phone call here on the line in Santa Cruz. Someone's up late. Joni and Joanne in Santa Cruz, good morning. What do you think we should do with DeLay?
It's Joy.
Joy. Oh, okay. Joy. I'm sorry,
hi.
Joy. Nice to talk to you. So,
good morning, you wonderful people.
Oh, you're terrific. So you're out there in Santa Cruz. I like Santa Cruz.
Oh, well, you got to come and visit and do a show here.
I used to do shows there at a little bar up on a hill, the Crow's Nest. It was I've had some of the worst shows of my life in Santa Cruz, but that was years ago.
Oh, well, you come back, we'll all love you.
Have you been to the Crow's Nest?
Yes, I have.
Have you seen comedy there?
No, I've not. I've just eaten there.
Oh, okay. Well, so what do you think we should do with DeLay?
Well, I don't think he's going to see the inside of a prison cell.
Oh, come on.
Well, I want him to.
Okay.
I don't think he will.
Okay, so what do you think?
However, here's my idea.
Okay.
I think he should be, you know, fine the max when they find him guilty, which they will.
Mm-hmm.
And then what he needs to do is spend, and as I said to your caller, and then I said, well, 800 hours.
800.
800 hours of volunteer community service.
Okay.
To rebuilding homes in Texas and Louisiana.
Wow. I think that's, and
that would be apt.
But and he should not get paid for it. Obviously, it
no,
has to be community
service.
Right? Absolutely, community service. There's no pay.
I've done community service. When I was a young girl, I got hit with a DUI, and I did community service for 40 hours at an elderly center.
Yeah,
It humiliates you, and it also makes you better.
It makes you better because, you know, there is humility involved in doing that. And I think he should be the last on the line, too. He should be like the gopher guy. You know, he can't have a leadership position in the Reconstruction.
You know,
I think
former President Jimmy Carter might be able to help him out there.
Well, you know,
with Habitat for Humanity.
Thank you for your call, Joy. Very nice talking to you out there in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Get some rest. We got a lot of people stay up late. Look, here's an interesting story, because it deals directly with our show. Is that yesterday? You know, for the last 2 days, we've been talking to Chris Wilson of thatseffedup.com and the photographs that he had on the site, the graphic photographs of Iraqi war dead. And apparently, you know, yesterday we read that the Army and the Pentagon were investigating. And I thought it was because of us. It may have been partially because of us, but it also might have been because of an official from the Council on American Islamic Relations who requested an inquiry. But nonetheless, in one day, the military had found no evidence to prove that American soldiers sent graphic pictures of Iraq war dead to the site in exchange for porn site membership. All right? That's a qualification. And
yeah.
One day, come on. All right? The fact is, there were no markings that identified individuals who may have sent the pictures, led an Army spokesman to say that they'll continue investigating if more evidence comes to light. Now, the official from the Council on American Islamic Relations who requested the inquiry said, quote, "I think the military's conclusion is premature, and it is unfortunately will send the message that they are not taking the case seriously," end quote. But here's the catch, Riley. Local commanders in Iraq and Afghanistan are going to stress to their troops that such actions could violate a military standards for good order and conduct. You know, it's sort of like, all right, fellas, enough with the pictures.
Yeah.
If I see one of you guys with a camera at the wrong time, I'm taking the away, and no dessert for a week. Here's what happened, is that there's no markings, like you asked, there's no
yeah.
markings on those pictures, so.
Yeah, so nobody knows who did it.
So they just said, hey, tell us, cool it.
Please. Yeah, but they didn't do it, but don't do it.
Right, here, I'll pay for the porn site. That's what they said. So when we come back, we're going to talk to Maxine Waters, the Democratic Congresswoman from Los Angeles, about the exciting day, the indictment of Tom DeLay, 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
He's one of the most powerful men in Washington.
It's beneath contempt.
Famous for his aggressive bare-knuckle style of politics.
If we do not act, she will die of thirst.
Tom DeLay faces investigations in Washington and Texas.
It's a philosophy built on values that are moral, universal, and I believe the source of our greatness.
Government watch groups are stepping up their calls for Tom DeLay to resign his post as majority leader.
The abuses we've seen in recent days do not reflect the views, policies, or fabric of this nation.
$57,000 all-expense-paid trip may have been funded by lobbyists, which is against the rules.
Is it ethical?
Three of DeLay's associates have been indicted.
Accusations of illegal campaign fundraising and improper ties to lobbyists.
We have the truth on our side.
Third DeLay trip that has been called into question.
And it is the truth.
Connection with illegal fundraising.
That will win us this argument.
Two campaign organizations that financed his re-election paid $500,000 to his wife and daughter.
Is it ethical?
I feel great about it.
It's a philosophy built on values that are moral and the certain knowledge that we are all ultimately responsible for our actions.
35 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
That is true. A Texas grand jury on Wednesday charged the bug-killing dwarf king of the GOP's legislative pig pack, Tom DeLay, and two political associates with criminal conspiracy. Criminal conspiracy for basically laundering money through the Republican National Committee to disperse it out to Republican legislators who were running for legislation, Republicans. So that's a state felony punishable by 6 months and up to 2 years in prison and a fine of up to $10,000. I want you to know, people, that DeLay is the first House leader to be indicted while in office in at least 100 years. Criminal conspiracy is the charge. Joining us now to discuss the indictment of House Majority Leader Tom DeLay is the Democrat from California's 35th Congressional District. We're pleased to welcome Congresswoman Maxine Waters to the show once again, a regular guest. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark and Mark. How are you doing this morning?
All right.
We're excited for the downfall of Tom DeLay.
My goodness, you're just too honest.
Sorry.
I'm the irreverent guy. So what was your reaction when you heard the news about delays in Dayton?
Well, we knew just about what was happening, what was going on. And so that's just one part of the problems that he has. That indictment was pretty much expected by some of us. And so, you know, he's been arrogant. He's been kind of in your face. He's been the enforcer. And so a lot of people were walking around, well, jumping around yesterday. Very, very happy.
Yeah. So now, is it safe to say that even among Republican legislators that there's a certain amount of relief? Because this guy sort of held all of them hostage in a way, didn't he?
Well, in many ways he did. I don't know if you'll ever hear some of his colleagues on the Republican side talk about relief. But the fact of the matter is they move very quickly. Blunt stepped up to the plate within a matter of hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess they knew that they had to do something to get him out of there. I mean, he couldn't stay according to the rules. He had to step down. So they did it very quickly, very swiftly, and made the change and, you know, trying to look as if they're moving on.
Congresswoman, one of the people that was considered to replace Tom DeLay, obviously, is a colleague of yours from your home state, David Dreyer from California. There have been various rumors as to why he didn't get the nod, one of which was they didn't want to take him off the House Rules Committee and replace him with Doc Hastings. But the other is a question about his sexuality. What are you hearing about that particular rumor in the halls of Capitol Hill?
Well, you know, you hear all kinds of rumors, and I don't know why it would be a problem even if he is gay or, you know, he's rumored to be gay, and I don't know if that would be a problem if he would just, you know, be honest about it and step up to the plate and go ahead and do what people do, live their lives. You know, we have some of the most brilliant, most effective members of the gay community working here in Washington, like Barney Frank.
But he's a Republican, Dreyer.
Yeah,
I know.
So it's all about keeping as much as possible in the closet.
Well, no comment. I know. Congresswoman, why do you think it is the progressive Democrats like yourself who want an independent Katrina probe, which apparently some people are trying to do, trying to help victims negotiate the bankruptcy laws that are getting ready to go into effect? Why does it appear that people like yourself and Congressman Conyers and Congressman Nadler, Congresswoman McKinney, Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, why are you so marginalized within the House?
Well, first of all, we are liberals. We're progressives. And the right wing a long time ago undermined the word liberal so badly until, you know, the Democratic caucus likes to stay away from that kind of description or designation. So we've been so undermined. To be a liberal is to be a bad thing. And so Democrats have moved further and further to the right. And those of us who stay, you know, out there in the liberal tradition are really seen as jeopardizing the whole caucus, and they run from us.
That's ridiculous. We're talking to Congresswoman Maxine Waters, Democrat from California. It just seems to me, Congresswoman, that we've got the delay indictment. We've got the Rove scandal. We've got the poor response to Katrina. We've got the Valerie Plame investigation. We've got all this stuff happening that it would seem that Democrats could at least get on the same page and use this tremendous Achilles heel that has been revealed through all these incidents with the Republican Party and facilitate some change, even reach across the aisle and get some of those disenchanted Republicans on board with making some changes in terms of disaster relief and in terms of actually helping people, of altering the bankruptcy legislation, maybe.
Well, you know, with Katrina and Rita, I'm hopeful that Americans who feel so strongly that their government should have been there to help these victims now understand what it is many of us are talking about. The responsibility for good governance. Also, all of a sudden, you know, people understand and there's poverty in this country. Hopefully, this will help Democrats step up to the plate and be real advocates for all Americans, for the least of these, and to make sure that people understand what their members of Congress are supposed to be doing. And maybe there'll be a change. maybe there'll be a new direction now.
Congresswoman, what do you think will happen if apparently during a meeting of the Republican caucus yesterday on the House, there was some talk of actually amending that rule that would allow Tom DeLay to stay as and remain as House Majority Leader or come back as House Majority Leader before his case is decided? Any chance of that happening?
They dare not. They dare not. They have gone as far as they can go with Tom DeLay, changing the rules for him. They had to back up before, and I certainly don't think that, despite the fact they're in your face all the time, that they would dare try that.
What about in terms of now that, you know, we're seeing Bush's popularity is, like, you know, way down. Certainly his handling of the war and its popularity with the people is way down. Is there any possibility that the Democrats will now sort of come together and start pushing for a timetable for a withdrawal?
Well, I hope so. You know, I formed the Out of Iraq Caucus working with Lynn Wolfe and Barbara Lee and John Conyers and others to try and give people a platform,
mm-hmm.
to keep people organized, to keep moving, to grow and help people understand what these polls are saying. So I'm hopeful that we're getting there. We're up to almost 70 members now. And we keep trying to let people know that the American people are on our side. And so this big march and rally that took place, things are happening. And let's hope that Democrats will have enough courage to do what they need to do and help drive this administration, shame this administration, and bring these troops home.
Hallelujah.
Congresswoman, a quick question on another subject. I know you knew Judge Constance Baker Motley, did you not?
Yes.
Talk a little bit about your relationship with her and what her passing means.
Well, actually, you know, I'm very pleased. When I was chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, I invited her to come and swear the members of the Congressional Black Caucus in the new session. She came, she told me she didn't come out very much, she didn't do these kinds of things, but she was absolutely delighted at the invitation, and she decided to come, and she did. She swore us all in that year, and she was here with Bill Cosby and a lot of other folks, had a great time. She was a great judge who was a beacon of light for us, and particularly the African-American community, you know, having achieved the success that she did. She's going to be missed. Again, she helped to open up the judiciary, and we're just going to keep looking for the people of that caliber to be able to get behind and to push.
Congressman Maxine Waters, thank you so much. It was great talking to you once again.
Thanks, Congresswoman.
See you, Mark and Mark.
Take care. Have a good day. It's 44 past the hour, folks. Look, you know, you love him, you hate him. Bruce Cherry's going to come in here, and he's going to pitch another great idea. No hate. Look at Bruce. He's like, wait, there are people that hate? 866-303-2270 is our number if you want to get ready to get involved in Bruce's pitch and maybe tell us what we can do to make it better, whether you like it, whether you don't like it. Bruce, nobody hates you. Don't cry. It's 44 past the hour. We'll be back with Bruce, why are you looking at me like that? Just come in here in a second and we'll do this thing. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition. Now how's that gonna look in a deposition? I got all messed up by a crooked family physician.
Forty-nine past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Don't worry, it's okay.
You all right there, buddy?
Yeah,
all right. Hey, Tom DeLay indicted, criminal conspiracy, could do up to 2 years, pay $10,000 fine. All very exciting. But we're going to digress from that for a moment. Remember, folks, get ready to call in and give your feedback to this. It's going to be we're going to do Bruce Cherry here in just a second. 866-303-2270 if you want to even get involved in our Pitch of the Week segment here. One of our writers, as you know, Bruce Cherry, has been trying to get a regular character on the show. So far, he's pitched us pirates, mentally retarded spies, and an effete mobster, among others. Bruce has told us that we should change the name of this segment to Profiles in Courage because of Bruce's bravery under adversity. He's still trying, and right now we welcome back writer Bruce Cherry with Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week.
Thank you very much, Mark, and thank you for mentioning the in the tease earlier to the piece. Thank you for mentioning the word hate, which I like to have bandied about before my appearance.
Let me just be honest with you, Bruce. It's hard to hate a guy whose hair is like that. What's going on with your hair? Do you have headphones on? Or are you hiding headphones? Oh, there they are. Okay.
People have no idea what I look like. Well, now I'm going to be recognized on the street.
Uh-oh. Yeah. What do you look like? You look like wavy gravy. Does that help anybody?
I look like Martin Van Buren.
You look like Martin Van Buren and Jerry Garcia.
Yeah, if they had a child.
Exactly.
Great. Now I have a new opener for my act.
Okay. Okay. I know what you're thinking. You're looking at me like a Martin Van Buren and Jerry Garcia had a kid. You'd lose even more people than you would have lost just walking up there.
Uh-oh. What the? No, look at that. Now my stage act is being critiqued.
I love you. Okay. I've never seen your stage act.
What were you doing when I was opening for you? Okay.
Oh.
As you know.
Just wondering how I could follow you.
Worrying.
He figured it out, obviously.
Go ahead,
sitting in the green room fretting. Yeah. Okay, I am fascinated with history. As you know, I'm known for my wide-ranging knowledge, and one of my areas of expertise is the medieval era. And I'm fascinated by the names of ancient rulers. You got, like, everybody had a name.
Yeah.
Like William the Conqueror, sure. Alfred the Great. But for all those good guys, there were other guys that just didn't do things very well, and they had names like, and these are true, Charles the Bald. Yeah, how would you like to go down in history as that? Or Ethelred the Unready, what was that like? Sir, it's time for the coronation. Yeah. Oh, man, I must have slipped in. This is true. There's actually a Charles the Fat to distinguish him from Charles the Bald.
Yeah.
That was his name.
Yeah.
I mean, God, I have a few extra pounds, but it's not like I'm known as Bruce the Fat.
I got something to tell you, buddy.
Let's move on. Now, to give the listeners a little background, after Rome left Britain at the end of the around the 5th century,
sure.
It broke into small kingdoms, and that's where the Arthurian legends come from, because we don't really know what was going on, but there were kings of the separate areas of England. So each week, you call a made-up King of Wessex, which I've named Cedric the Ineffectual.
Okay.
Ready for the fairy dust?
Sure.
He's a metaphor for George Bush.
Okay.
Topicality?
Yeah.
Check. Funny? Coming right up. Let's go to the script.
Okay, here we go. Our leader is an idiot. Sadly, 'twas always thus.
'Twas.
Yeah, I got it. Okay. Now it's time for our weekly phone call to the year 750 and the King of Wessex, Cedric the Ineffectual. Let me just dial the histriophone. Histriophone. That sounds ridiculous.
I'll think up another name. It's just a placeholder, right? Just dial.
Okay.
Hello, this is the operator. The year you are trying to reach, 750, does not have the technology to receive your call.
There must be a mistake, operator. I have a histriophone.
Histriophone? That's a stupid name.
It's just a placeholder.
Connecting.
Okay, now we have a little problem, and that was this. Why would somebody in the year 750 pick up a phone? Okay. No problem. The listeners will go along with it if we spackle it over with laughter. Okay, here we go.
Okay. Luckily, this is a speakerphone. Hello, Cedric. Hello, pick up. Pick up. Pick up the object that looks like the jawbone of a stag.
Hello? What conjuring is this?
Cedric, my name is Mark Maron.
Are you the spirit of the stag?
No, I'm calling you from the year 2005. We have devices that can send our voices many miles through the air.
Oh, you mean like Marconi's wireless?
How did you know about that?
1930 just called.
Okay. Brilliant, okay? Now, you can shake your head and mutter brilliant at any time, actually.
Brilliant.
Let me point out a couple things. Once you start out with the goofball Monty Python voices, you're halfway there. You can put it on cruise control and just take it. But no, we shift into overdrive.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Okay?
Now the dance begins in earnest with topicality mania.
Okay.
Remember, metaphor for George Bush.
I go back to the script, right?
Yes.
Cedric, we heard you were having some foreign relations problems.
Yes. Viking raiders came and destroyed our World Trade Center.
Your World Trade Center?
Some would call it a barn, but the animals got...
The animals got loose. Vikings, huh? What did you do?
Why, we invaded Northumbria.
That doesn't seem to make sense, Cedric.
We couldn't find the Vikings.
And Northumbria is a more target-rich environment. They have huge reserves of dried cow dung.
Dried cow dung? I guess you could use that for fuel.
Oh, that's a good idea. I'd write that down if we were a literate society.
Oh, God. Well, how did the invasion of Northumbria go?
I'm afraid we got bogged down.
Bogged down? What happened?
We got stuck in a bog! What else would I mean by bogged down?
To us, it's just a saying. In this day and age, we don't get stuck in actual bogs.
You live in a paradise.
Well, what are you going to do now?
We're going to stay in the bog. Anything else would embolden our enemies.
Okay, so far so good.
Yeah. I think I should, what are you talking about?
Wait a minute. Chris Lopresto is gesturing wildly from the booth.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay.
Yes, I just want to say this piece is pure genius. It's like I'm seeing George Bush for the first time. That guy is a loser.
Hey. Kayla likes it.
Wow, yeah, that seemed really earnest, too, the way he said that. That seemed like he was really speaking from his heart there, Bruce.
This is a keeper.
Dude, I'm going to have to tell you, it's not going to happen. Not with this one. I can't do it.
Oh, man, I'm not even going to tell you about Sir Delay, the ethically challenged.
No, absolutely not. Thanks again, Bruce. We'll see you next week with Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week. So,
oh, Lord.
Go ahead and do the fanfare. Go.
Boom, 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 boom.
So are we going to take calls after?
Do everything?
No. Uh-oh. You want to? Yeah. All right. Yeah, stay on the phone. You can give it a little feedback in just a second. We're obviously celebrating Bruce Cherry's newest pitch, and also celebrating the fact that Tom DeLay all day today. Today is Tom DeLay got indicted day. He got indicted on criminal conspiracy. He can do up to 2 years in prison. There could be a $10,000 fine. But best of all is the stink is on all of them, and hopefully it'll stick until the midterm elections. We'll take a little feedback on Bruce Cherry after this. It's 57 past the hour. Aaron America Radio's Morning Sedition. Six past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition all day long, celebrating the fact that a Texas grand jury on Wednesday, yesterday, charged the bug-killing dwarf king of the GOP's legislative pig pack. House Leader Tom DeLay, Majority Leader, two political associates are charged with criminal conspiracy for laundering money through the Republican National Committee. Now, so we're going to get into that in a second. We're actually going to have on the phone, we're going to have one of our buddies, Jim Moore, the author of Bush's Brain, longtime Texas journalist. I can't wait to talk to him. We're going to get into all the DeLay indictment. It's all going to happen. But right now it's very important that we get some feedback on Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week, because I don't want to leave you hanging. And Johnny K Street is waiting in the wings.
Switchboard lit up.
He pitched basically, you want to go over quickly what the pitch was? You were Cedric. It was a metaphor for...
It was a metaphor for George Bush. I was Cedric the Ineffectual.
In 750.
The year 750.
A.D.
Kingdom of Wessex.
Kingdom of Wessex. I call on the Histrio phone.
Yeah.
And I get to talk to you.
We'll
and you start. Yeah, all right, fine. Mm-hmm. So let's take some quick feedback here. We got Glenn in Long Island. Glenn.
Hey, good morning.
Yeah, what's up,
Glenn?
Well, you know, the character names are good. You could have a lot of fun with that, but you're calling the 8th century. You have to at least use a rotary phone or get Ernestine the operator to help you out.
So you're saying that it's not an issue with the fact that there were no phones, but you have to have...
the right kind of phone.
The touchstone thing just doesn't work. It doesn't amplify the joke because what? Come on, Glenn.
That's too new. It's ridiculous.
It's too new.
It's 750 A.D. So oh, my God. That's unbelievable.
He didn't email him in the 7th century.
That's a little nitpicky, isn't it, Glenn, or am I wrong?
Well, no, it's just that, you know, when I heard the touch tones, it blew the whole concept.
Oh, that ruined the bit for you.
You know what? Yeah. Obviously, this gentleman doesn't understand, and radio, we have a little thing called timing, and we can't sit there and wait for it.
Would that have been,
that's what slowed down all those the movies from the 30s.
Wait, isn't it funnier to hear touchstone phones in the 700s?
I believe Brendan has a point, too.
Glenn.
But you know what? This is very encouraging. People are trying to take my concept and run with it.
They're actually...
Thanks for the input.
Awkwardly, they're trying to expand on it.
Thanks for the input there, Glenn. Yeah, no, he's got no point whatsoever. It was 750 AD. You need the touchstone. That's more funny.
But, as I said...
But nonetheless, the bid was a tremendous failure. Wait, here we go. Brian in Everett, who we haven't talked to in a while. God knows where his head's at. Brian, what's up, buddy?
What's up, Brian?
You know, some of us have real jobs, man.
Yeah, what is that, Brian?
You know, you're taking this whole bit. You're stealing my idea. I sent you guys an email.
Whoa. Back up, dude. Let's deliberate this properly. You're accusing Bruce...
I'm a cook, man. I work with food.
So you'll want to wait to hear our next segment.
What the hell does that mean?
I think you should work in a more ventilated area.
I'll tell you what else, man. This whole time travel bit, you know, the black helicopters in the Old Testament. Did you know that? Check out the book of Ezekiel, man.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you're right. In Ezekiel, it said that FEMA... Well, all right.
Wait, Brian, what else, man?
What, man?
I'm like Vincent Van Gogh, and you won't appreciate me until like the year 20. I think Future Mark will call and say, "Oh, that Brian guy was a genius."
That Brian guy was a genius. That guy.
I
think you're stealing my actual character of a paranoid loser.
Yeah. All right.
All right, then.
As we move forward.
Right now, Brian, you accused Bruce Cherry of stealing a bit that you sent in an email. Now, Bruce says he doesn't read any of the emails, so I don't know. Maybe this is just that
synchronicity. You know, they invented calculus at the same time. It's the collective subconscious.
Wow, you're really rolling, aren't you?
Yeah.
So you're just saying it's like skipping stones on the great collective unconscious.
Is this the guy that invented calculus?
Yes, Brian has invented...
I invented the omelet, too, so don't bother.
Thank you, Brian. We'll talk to you soon. Will you call more often? I miss you, man.
5 o'clock on the radio because of the stupid station.
Uh-oh.
We miss you, Brian. Make sure you call more often. Right now, we have other things to do.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay.
The inventor
of the omelet.
By all means, self-mutilate as soon as possible.
All right, there are a lot of big stories in the news this week, so it's time to get some bets down with our Inside the Beltway oddsmaker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where's the action, bro?
Follows me, baby!
Right.
Is this Cherry guy on drugs or what? What's the deal? Tom DeLay's been hammered. Hammered and nailed, baby.
Yeah, I'll say.
Everyone knew this DeLay guy was crooked. DeLay has whored himself out more than Heidi Fleiss. And he's gotten paid for more around the world trips. The difference is Heidi Fleiss did time.
So you don't think Tom DeLay's going to end up going to jail, Johnny?
DeLay will see the inside of an Al-Qaeda cell before he sees the inside of a jail cell. And I'll give you 1,001 on it.
I'll take that for 100, buddy.
Hey, I'm down for a C-note.
Beautiful. DeLay said he was going to step aside until he was exonerated. The chances of him being exonerated, 500-1. He's guiltier than a Catholic priest at a Cub Scout jamboree.
I'll definitely take that for 100.
Yo, this is like stealing money. Put me down for 100 also.
Beautiful. Of course, DeLay did what every Bush hack does when they get caught. He blames someone else. I'm innocent. I didn't do it. I didn't take illegal trips. I never took a payoff. I didn't know she was a hooker. I was asking her for directions. Those aren't my drugs. I was just looking at kiddie porn for research. Someone's trying to frame me. It's always something with this guy.
Did you say kiddie porn?
I got a message for Tom. I didn't know buying a Thailand bar girl, shipping her back to the States, and locking her in my basement was illegal. DeLay. Stop whining. Take it from my cousin Johnny E. That whole someone is trying to frame me crap doesn't work.
It sounds like you've been indicted by a grand jury yourself there.
It's all in my book. You bet my life, the Johnny K Street story. Christmas is right around the corner. Makes a great stocking stuffer.
Do you have any Michael Brown action, Johnny?
Michael Brown, there's another corrupt Bush hack. This guy is so spineless, I'm surprised he could sit upright. You know the big difference between me and Michael Brown? I take action, baby. When Brown was questioned this week about all the screw-ups he caused after Katrina, he blamed the mayor and governor of New Orleans, Michael Chertoff, Condoleezza Rice, and National Guard, Pete Fountain, Fats Domino, Paul Prudhomme, and Dr. John. This guy is such a complete screw-up, I'll give you 1,001. He goes back to judging horses, gets kicked in the head, then spends the rest of his life drooling into a cup and telling people he's Andrew Jackson.
Johnny, I'll take that for 100.
Yeah, what the heck? Put me down for a C-note, Johnny.
Beautiful.
What kind of action you have on the rumors that Bush is drinking again?
I guarantee he's not only drinking, he's back on the happy day.
Happy does.
You know, the flake, toot, nose candy, devil dandruff, bimbo baby.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
Ever see the way he grinds his teeth and does that funny thing with his jaw when he does speeches? He's more spun than a Scott McClellan press conference. I'll give you even money that within a month, Bush will come stumbling out of the White House, bare-chested, jacked up on blow, holding a bottle of Jim Beam, screaming at Cindy Sheehan, "You want a piece of me, bitch?" It's going to look like an episode of Cops. Did that sound like Bush?
Yeah, it was just like he was in the room. But look, I'll... Exactly. I'll take 500 on that.
Yeah, put me down for 100.
All right, you're down. Before I go, a little Katrina-related story, if I may. Thanks to the exposure I'm getting on your show, the city of New Orleans contacted me about possibly opening a riverboat casino. K's on the coast. They thought my name might be able to attract some tourist business back to New Orleans.
Wow, that's great news there, Johnny. Your own casino, that's incredible.
Whoa, take it easy. I turned them down. I said, listen, I'll write you a check. I'll fill a sandbag. I can hook you up with some sweatsuits. I know a guy, but opening a casino on the coast, forget it. God intended for people to gamble in the desert, and that's why he gave us Las Vegas.
Wow. Johnny, God didn't give us Las Vegas. Bugsy Siegel gave us Las Vegas.
He was a god to me. I'm out of here. I got to go to a little welcome home party. You know what I mean? Enough said.
Uh-oh.
All right. Take it easy, Johnny. In just a few minutes, we're going to have Jim Moore, author of Bush's Brain, and also he's been on the trail of delay for many years. He's a great Texas journalist. He's going to talk to us by phone from Austin, Texas. Stay with us for that. 14 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the f*** up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Delay is charged with laundering campaign money for the Republican National Committee, which would violate Texas law. The indictment comes as Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist faces a federal investigation into his sale of stock.
The grand jury has charged the Texas congressman and two political associates with conspiracy in a campaign finance scheme. Delay says he'll step down temporarily as House Majority Leader. As required by House Republican Party rule, Delay is largely responsible for winning passage of the Republican legislative agenda in the House.
Now let me be very, very clear. I have done nothing wrong.
The president's spokesman, Scott McClellan, says Bush still sees Delay as an effective leader who's done good things.
Criminal conspiracy is a state jail felony punishable by 6 months to 2 years in a state jail and a fine of up to $10,000.
Delay is the highest-ranking member of Congress ever to be indicted. He says it is the result of a political witch hunt.
Now let me be very, very clear. I have done nothing wrong.
6 months to 2 years in state jail and a fine of up to $10,000.
20 past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron, that's my buddy Mark Riley.
Hi!
You're listening to Air America Radio, that is true. Texas grand jury on yesterday charged the bug-killing dwarf king of the GOP's legislative pig pack, Tom Delay, House Majority Leader, and two associates with criminal conspiracy, which is a state felony. And by the way, Delay is the first House leader to be indicted while in office in at least 100 years, criminal conspiracy. You know, I want to reach out to Texans. We got a lot of Texan listeners, and I certainly don't want to give the impression that we don't like Texas here at Air America, because I'll tell you, honestly, Austin is one of my favorite cities. I was actually going to vacation there with my brother next month until we decided to go to Santa Fe. I'm sorry. But, you know, I grew up in New Mexico. Joining us now from Austin is a man who has spent much of his career exposing the misdeeds of Texas conservatives, most notably Karl Rove, George W. Bush, and today's man of the hour, Tom Delay. His best-selling book, Bush's Brain, will be released next month in an abridged paperback version with new analysis and a new title, Rove Exposed, How Bush's Brain Fooled America. Joining us now from the lovely city of Austin, Texas, journalist and author Jim Moore. Good morning, Jim. Have you been up all night just excited, thrilled, can't sleep because you're overwhelmed, ecstatic?
No, I've just been calling up everybody and saying, I told you so, you know. So
that's it? No party? Come on, I thought there'd be a party.
It would be a party if it weren't so ugly, what all the things that have happened.
You know?
You look at what's going on in Washington and you think, you know, people were cynical enough about government before all of this happened. Imagine what, you know, the turnout this is going to have an effect on in the next election, probably.
Well, it's going to be I hope it's going to have a good effect on the next election, Jim. I think what we're seeing here, and I'm sure, you know, you would agree with me, is that we're finally seeing under the rock, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think that's true, Mark, but the thing that bothers me is that, you know, if you go all the way back to Vietnam and Watergate and Iran-Contra and everything else that's occurred in this country, including most recently the Iraq War, we're looking at a situation where people don't trust anything anybody says, and you begin to get this whole idea that why vote because it makes no difference. Now I'm optimistic, and I'm on the side that you're on. I believe that people are going to be motivated to take back control of the government away from the crooks, and I hope that it does increase involvement in the process, because that's how we got here in the first place, was by not being involved in the process.
Now, basically, you know, Tom DeLay and his associates were running money through the Republican National Committee and back into campaigns for the state legislator down there in Texas. And this guy, District Attorney Ronnie Earl, is now being slandered, obviously, by Tom DeLay. But give us a little of your feedback on Ronnie Earl, because everything I've read, it shows that this guy's a guy, he's got integrity, he's not partisan in who he indicts or tries to indict.
Well, I've covered every trial of a politician that Ronnie has prosecuted, and he hasn't exactly covered himself with glory when it comes to winning the big cases. Now, and that is some cause for concern. For instance, the case against Kay Bailey Hutchison, using her office as state treasurer here in Austin to raise money, he prosecuted her for that, for using it for political purposes, and because of some evidentiary problems, the case was dropped the opening day of the trial. He prosecuted Jim Maddox, the former state attorney general, for a bribery case involving Mobile Exxon,
uh-huh.
And Maddox won that case. And a case against the former House Speaker here, Gib Lewis, was eventually settled when Lewis agreed not to run for re-election. He's also, you know, but he's prosecuted more Democrats than he has Republicans. So there's only been two high-profile Republicans, Hutchison and Martin. And Ronnie has done a good job of getting the case into the courtroom, but not a good job within the courtroom in terms of prosecution. So my feeling is that he's on his way out. He's in his mid-60s. This is his last big deal. And he would not have brought this before the grand jury and asked him to vote on an indictment unless he had an absolute slam-dunk case. And I also hope that they bring in some hotshot outside prosecutorial counsel to assist him in the case.
Jim Moore, do you think Ronnie Earl has enough on the other two people who've been indicted, Colvandro and Ellis, who have now been indicted twice, am I right?
Yeah, they were indicted previously in this whole case for the money laundering scheme, and now they've been indicted as part of this conspiracy charge against Mr. DeLay.
You think they'll flip him?
Well, that's a part of what I think is going on. I mean, the indictment yesterday presented this check that was paid to the committee and as part of the evidence, and that's not enough to get a conviction, of course. But I think what we're looking at is that Colvandro and Ellis, under the other charges, are facing some pretty serious penalties. I think in one of the charges, it's up to 25 years in jail. So.
Oops.
He's got a, you know, they got a hammer to hammer on the hammer with, and so maybe one of those guys flipped. The other thing to remember is that some corporations, Sears and Bacardi Rum and these guys, have also been indicted as part of the conspiracy, and my guess is these corporations don't want to be dragged through a criminal trial, and there's probably people within these half dozen corporations that might be willing to cooperate and testify that there was a conspiracy and that they got beat up on by Trimpac and DeLay to give this money for the laundering.
Wow, so the corporations might cut them loose.
I think that's entirely possible.
Well, that's exciting. That's exciting stuff, Jim.
Yeah, I believe that's the case, and that's what I'm hearing from down in the courthouse. But I think, Mark, more the real serious stuff is also going to have to come from Colvandro or Ellis. But even if he hasn't flipped those guys, I think there are people within the corporate community are saying, look, we're not taking the heat. We got pressured to do this, and we're going to cooperate with the DA and tell them what we know so that we can get clear of this.
Okay.
Get on with the business for our shareholders.
Well, Jim, stay on the phone. Our guest is Jim sure. Moore, the author of what's going to be released as Roe v. Exposed, How Bush's Brain Fooled America. We're talking to him about Tom DeLay. We're going to talk a little bit about the implications of all of these guys, Frist, Roe, Libby, Michael Brown, all of them, you know, under investigation, being indicted or failing, and what the Democrats have to do, and also a little more about the teeth of the case itself. It's 27 past the hour. Stay tuned for more Jim Moore after this. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Hey, it's 34 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
I got it.
Okay, we're going to, in just a few minutes, we're going to lighten it up with a guy who wrote a book on tailgating, on grilling, and that kind of stuff, which is what's happening to Tom DeLay right now.
Yeah, right.
David Joachim is going to be here in just a few minutes to talk about his book, The Tailgater's Cookbook. But right now, on the phone with us now, to get deeper into the indictment of Tom DeLay on criminal conspiracy charges, is our friend Jim Moore. He's the author of Rove Exposed, How Bush's Brain Fooled America, which is the new name of Bush's Brain. Yes?
There you go.
All right,
just another marketing scam thrust upon America.
You know what? I'm going to give you that, Jim. I think you deserve it. I think it's a great book, and any way you can sell more of them is important because Karl Rove. Now let's talk about that for just a second. Is there any chance that this guy's going to go down? Obviously, he's never going to be out of the political world, but could he be sent out of this White House in disgrace and charged?
Well, if he gets indicted, the president will certainly have to distance himself, but I don't think they would do anything more than move Karl Rove down the street to the RNC. Let's face it, the Republicans now, while they thought they were going to acquire even more power in the 06 elections, are going to have to struggle to retain the majority, and the only person with any type of capability and strategic skills to make that happen is Karl. So they cannot completely divorce themselves.
Yeah, it's maybe an aneurysm or stroke. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, he's both the cure and the disease at the moment.
No, what you're saying is encouraging in some sense that we do have a chance at shifting the balance in the midterms. And what you said earlier was a little disconcerting in the sense that, as you say, public perception of all politicians gets polluted when these kind of things happen. And is that an issue that you can see on behalf of the Democrats? That they don't seem to be very vocal. They don't seem to be very disorganized. Are some of them as guilty as some of these Republicans in your eyes?
Well, I think their great crime at the moment is that they're standing at the curb and watching the house burn, and then they're not saying anything about how they're going to rebuild it. They need a Moses, and they don't have one. There's no one stepping into the gap and saying, look, we put up with this too long. Let's take the country in a new direction. Nobody is articulating any sort of inspirational vision or anything else for America. And I'm not suggesting we've got to start presidential politics right now, but we do have to have people saying something more than these guys are corrupt and these guys are evil. And we're not getting that from the Democrats.
But, you know, Jim, it strikes me that if you look over the length and breadth of America's political history, we see over and over again attempts at reform, attempts at reforming processes, attempts at reforming the kind of thing that got Tom DeLay indicted. And it seems like people focus on the personality, but they don't focus on the process. And reform never does really happen, does it?
No, usually not. Usually what happens, I mean, I'm looking at some stuff right now in terms of labor law for this. What the two administrations have done, and they use executive orders. Bill Clinton institutes a set of executive orders to help the unions, and one of the first things George Bush does when he comes into office is he rescinds those and institutes executive orders that help labor and corporations. I mean, we get this constant back and forth in American policy that does cause us problems in terms of making real progress. But what's happened in the case of these guys, though, Mark, is that they have overreached and have been so greedy and so power-hungry that they have just destroyed the whole notion of democracy almost. There's no trust, no confidence, no truth anymore. I mean, and I blame much of this on Karl. He has taken lying, and he has turned lying into an acceptable political tactic. And we've got to overcome that with a determination by the electorate to say, we're going to fix this. We're going to get back in control of our government.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jim Moore, I think a lot of people are starting to see through it, given the approval ratings. And I think that the people that are still on board, despite the reality creeping through, are just the type of people that believe that that is an appropriate way for politicians, business people, humans to interact in the world. It's not about what is right. It's about what you can get away with no matter what.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Mark. I think people are finally paying attention. The problem is our system tends to be reactive instead of proactive. The good news is for all of us, and the thing that should give us hope, is that our system is working, that it appears that these guys have overreached and the law is holding them accountable, and we can have some confidence and trust in that and then set about the business of fixing the big problems.
I like that. That's a good way to close. Thank you very much, Jim Moore. It's great talking to you. Good luck with the re-release of the Bush's Brain as Rove exposed how Bush's Brain fooled America. It's great talking to you, man.
Good talking to you guys.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Jim.
All right. Take it easy. So, look, you know, in a couple minutes, we're going to be talking about grilling, which I, you know, I'm excited about. Dan Pashman's very excited about because he himself is a
griller.
He sees himself as a Renaissance man, but he sees himself as a very important grill person. he's got his own recipes that he doesn't want to share. I said, we got this guy coming out who wrote the Tailgaters Cookbook, this David Joachim. And I said, why don't you share that recipe for the drunken salami? And Pashman's like, no, I can't do it.
What?
It's pretty top secret. I mean, I need to get some kind of disclaimer that I'm not going to lose the rights over this thing.
What rights would that be? I mean, if you're not making, I mean, what the hell is that?
Intellectual property, man.
What does that even mean? That
you parking think that, lot intellectual property.
You think that, like, you know, it's only a matter of weeks before millions of people across the country are dancing down the street with drunken salami, with David Joachim's drunken salami?
Drunken salami with the Pashman household at a tailgate.
He didn't have a very good one, though.
Well, I tell you, it was drunken McDonald after I had it.
Well, the six beers might have helped that too, Brandon. And the bongo juice, which is the Pashman family tailgating beverage of choice.
He had all of those things?
Oh, Brandon was I love
the fact that Dan Pashman sort of perpetuates this weird self-generating myth about the tribal unity of the Pashman clan. And he's one of those guys that's like, he'll actually start a story with you like, you want to hear a great Dan Pashman story?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Aren't you Dan Pashman? Yeah, it's excellent. It's a favorite of the Pashman clan. I'm like, what the hell world do you live in? It's like, did you ever read The Odyssey by Pashman? Dan Pashman? About how the Pashman clan conquered New Jersey.
He's like Rove. He's continuing the legacy.
Yeah. All right. You know what we didn't get into is maybe we'll get into it tomorrow. So there's no reason for me to even mention it.
You can't do that.
What a crappy tease that is. Hey, we're going to talk about something I can't even mention tomorrow. No, I love this story about Al Qaeda's number two killed again and again and again and again. They just killed this guy. Iraqi and U.S. forces killed Abdullah Abu Azam, who is the latest number two man to Al Qaeda's al-Zarqawi. He was the head of Al Qaeda in Baghdad. But the funny thing is our researchers and the fellows have put together a list of 33 number twos
over the last 2 years
that have been killed. Either they're number two or a lieutenant, an associate of. And this is, I guess, how the military presents it.
Yeah.
Because so basically, any Iraqi that they kill who has any ties at all, even if they were just a driver, the guy that fixed the tire.
The
Al Qaeda pretzel guy is number two. He's number two. He's a lieutenant.
Zarqawi's cab.
An associate.
Two.
33 of them. So you got to come in here, Pashman, because I don't know. I've been to one tailgating event in my life, and that was to cover it for a TV show. So
I'll help you out with the tailgating.
All right, so we're going to talk to David Joachim in just a second, the author of the Tailgaters Cookbook. For those of you who like that kind of stuff, stick on board. For those of you who don't, you might learn something. 42 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Is it time already to put this ship down? Is that what's going on? It's 47 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
There are more than 20 million tailgaters who set up camp in parking lots outside sporting events and concerts every year. It has become so popular that even sporting goods stores have their own tailgating sections now. Our next guest is the author of The Tailgater's Cookbook, and he's here in the studio with us to give us tips on how to be the best tailgater out there. Good morning, David Joachim. How are you?
All right.
Good morning.
So, I'm assuming that tailgating probably goes back to ancient conflicts where there were actually people grilling whole animals waiting to go to war.
You got it. It really does. Actually, some of the earliest documented tailgating that you could classify as that is
the Battle of Bull Run, Civil War, Manassas, Virginia. People came to watch this conflict.
Sure, and they had blenders. And they
actually, they brought in pies. They carted in pies, and they watched it. And some people got killed. Things got out of hand. But that could be the first tailgate. And then right from the first college football games, 1863, between Rutgers and Princeton, students met before the game to drink and socialize. And this tradition just continues as NFL got popular and some other cultural things came into play, like the American love of barbecuing and picnicking. And when Ford came out with the station wagon and that got popular in the suburbs, that blended with the love of barbecuing and sport to really get tailgating into what it is today.
That also started the great American tradition of living in your car.
That's right. That's right.
So... How, now, you've probably met some pretty fanatic tailgaters. We have one here. Right here, Dan Pashman.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
Now, how long do people prepare? Some people probably spend the entire few months leading up to the football season.
Yeah, well, actually, NASCAR tailgaters will spend a whole week there tailgating for the week, and they consider it a vacation. And they'll set up camp, RVs, tents, or whatever they have, and they will live there for the entire week because it's a little less expensive than going to every single race. They'll be there for the entire event and support their racers and hang out with their friends. But football, if college, they'll come a couple days before. It really depends on the stadium and what they allow.
Now, would you consider people like growing mushrooms in their closet, preparing to go to Grateful Dead shows? Is that a type of tailgating? is that a psychedelic version? Because there's definitely a tailgating thing in the parking lot of a Grateful Dead show.
I was at a bookstore the other day, and someone came up. I was signing a book, and she said, I tailgate at rock shows. And I was like, absolutely, yeah, that happens. I mean, tailgating happens anywhere you have people partying outside the car that they drove there.
But that's more of a vegan tailgating action.
Right.
And David, one of the things that I get most interested in when I'm in the parking lot, I'm a big New York Giants football fan. Yeah. I go to the Giants games. And one of the things that I'm always looking at when I'm in the parking lot is checking out other people's setups.
Exactly.
That's a big part of tailgating. And it's almost become a bit of a peeing contest. My dream is to have one of those short buses. Uh-huh. Painted Giants blue,
right,
and set up with like a fridge and a kegerator and a bathroom in there.
Yes, yeah, there are lots of these battle wagons.
What are some of the? Oh, okay, I like that. All right, that's a good term. Now, what are some of the most impressive setups that you've ever seen?
Well, the Baltimore Ravens have a panel truck that's called the SWAT team, which stands for Stop Working and Tailgate, and it's painted in the purple and black. Baltimore Ravens. Actually, there's a couple Philadelphia Eagles fan and Giants fan. This, the Moody's, Keith Moody and his wife are fans of two rival teams.
Oh, wow.
Uh-oh.
And they have a panel truck that is decorated one side with the Giants colors, one side with Eagles colors, and they go to home games either way, whoever's having the home game, they drive it to. Somehow they make this marriage work. Yeah. I don't know how.
I have no respect for that Giants fan whatsoever. What a disgrace.
Now, I got a question, because I'm not a big tailgater, although I must say that part of what killed the Jet Stadium here in New York was the fact that there was no space anywhere.
Absolutely.
No provisions made for tailgating whatsoever. But isn't this really just about getting drunk in the end?
Well, I mean, that's part of it. People are getting psyched up for the game, but there's a long tradition of supporting the team, supporting the players, and the fans' enthusiasm really does make for a better performance. It's like a rock concert. The louder people cheer, the better performance you're going to get from people on stage. So the fans consider themselves part of the team. And
fanatically, like some of them.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think there's also part of it that's a real communal experience.
Everyone out in the parking lot, like, can I tell the one?
Please do.
One experience. I went to the Giants tailgating event to do a TV show. I was interviewing them. And as I interviewed them, they were, first of all, they hated me because I didn't understand what they were doing, because I'm not a sports guy, and I'm just sort of like, so you guys like the team or what? And they are so fanatical, and they all know each other, and some of them will actually set up buffets, free buffets, so you just walk around and they're like, what's up, have some food, which I thought, to me, that's a good time no matter what, where you are.
Right.
But so it is actually a community, and they feel like they are essential. Some of them feel like that the team could not survive without them.
Well, that's right. It goes back to the tradition of the 12th man, which started at Texas A&M University in 1922. E. King Gills, this guy, was sitting in the stands, and he's a former football player. The coach said, suit up, get ready, in case one of the football players can't finish the game, I want you on the team. And that's just a symbol of how fans
he's the patron saint.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
The patron saint of the tailgaters?
Yeah.
So let's get into what's in the book before we just get caught up with the history.
Well, you mentioned the food. I mean, this is a cookbook. everything's organized by the gear that you need for tailgating. So the recipes are on the grill, the recipes for things you're going to have on the grill, in the cooler, out of the bag, out of the pot if you're bringing a little camp stove and you're making a chili or stew or something. So I try to keep menus simple. It really depends on how elaborate you want to get, how experienced you are with tailgating, but I like to only have one or two things that I'm actually cooking at the game. It could be something like ribs that are going to go for 4 hours,
yeah,
or maybe a brisket that's going to go for 12.
Wait a minute, you cook a brisket? You already get there the night before?
Yeah, smoke a brisket. You get there, you can start it.
You know, the most impressive thing I've ever seen in my years of tailgating in the Giants Stadium parking lot, these guys showed up at 9 in the morning. And
that's late.
Yeah, that is late. That's when the parking lot opened. It was a Giants-Redskins game, and they brought wood and a power drill, and they built a rotisserie spit, and they cooked a whole pig in the parking lot.
Wow, this is like Battle of Functional Obsessive Compulsives.
Yeah, really. Well, it's true. It's like the battle going out on the field. They can't do it on the field, so they play out their battle in the parking lot.
Yeah, but it's a cooking battle.
It's true, but it's a fan battle. It's like who's got the most outlandish costumes and who's got the most team spirit, the best food, the biggest tailgate, the most people.
But David, one of my questions for you in writing this, as you're writing this cookbook, you know, to me, when I'm preparing a tailgate, one of the big issues that you wouldn't have to deal with if you're just in the kitchen cooking is practicality.
Right.
You're on the road. You got to transport everything in the car, and then you're going to be out in a parking lot setting it up.
Yeah.
How does that issue factor into your recipes?
Yeah, every recipe is set up with two parts. One is before you go, it's things that you do at home, and most of that is most of the work you do at home. Because for tailgating, if you've ever done it, you know it's like camping. You need to get everything ready before you get there.
Right.
So you've got all your supplies. If you're making a spice rub for a steak or something, you make it before and you bring it in a little plastic baggie. You don't do as much at the game as you do as little at the game as you possibly can. And the second part of the recipes is when you get there, and that's finishing off the recipe. Maybe it's lighting up the grill, cooking off a steak, pulling some salads out of a cooler. So it keeps everything really simple. But like I said, there's a gamut of recipes in there. You know, some for tailgaters who are new to the experience. Others are for people who've been doing it for years and years.
Like Dan Pashman.
Why is beer seemingly so central, even to grilling the meats in some cases?
Well, drinking has a very long tradition in tailgating. So actually, my rule for the recipe development with this book was every recipe has to have alcohol or chili peppers in it. That's what tailgaters love. And I thanked my liver in the acknowledgments for making it through the recipe test.
So, you know, Dan, that's where he's going to part ways with you. Our little Dan Pashman can't handle the spicy.
Yeah.
But I like beer.
Oh, did you see his face? Why'd you have to tell him? Why'd you have to tell everybody?
Well, here you go.
I'll own that. I'm not worried about it.
How about brats and beer? That's not a spicy dish. But
right.
That's a regional favorite from Wisconsin. Green Bay Packers, they're loving the brats and beer. I mean, that's popular all over. Sausages on the grill are real popular, but I think they own that in terms of a regional dish. Some of the other regional dishes that are popular, you'll see ribs and Kansas City. They know how to barbecue. You'll see brisket in Texas. You'll see up in Buffalo, New York, they have a dish called Beef on Weck, which is a roast beef sandwich, but it has a special kummel weck roll, which is caraway seeds on the top of
it.
So I have recipes for all of these in the book. What I did was if I couldn't go to the place where I knew regional favorites were being cooked in the parking lot, I called fan clubs, I called tailgaters, and I said, what's your favorite? Can you give me a recipe? Or if not, tell me what it is, and then I'll make it up. So some of them are inspired by regional favorites. Others are recipes that people gave to me, and then I adapted and tested.
Well, great. The book is The Tailgaters Cookbook. Our guest has been David Joachim. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
You can go pick that up if you're a big tailgater. Also, if you just want to run away from life and open up businesses across the country for an evening.
There's a professional tailgater out there.
All good. All right, right now, if you're just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Tom DeLay has been indicted on one count of criminal conspiracy and has been forced to relinquish his House leadership post. DeLay plans to fight the charges vigorously. A conviction would mean he could no longer associate with known felons, effectively ending his leadership role in the Republican Party. Experts say due to certain peculiarities in Texas law, the possible penalties against DeLay could be converted from prison time to a re-election fundraiser barbecue. Some think more indictments against DeLay will be forthcoming, especially from Cockroach Court, which is charging him with 25 trillion counts of murder. because he was an exterminator. All right. House Democrats are considering dropping their boycott of a Republican-controlled select committee that has been examining the bungled government response to Hurricane Katrina. Democrats say they will either boycott the panel or not boycott the panel, or ideally some non-threatening judgment-free combination of the two. An airliner in the Philippines was grounded for 13 hours because of a mouse on board the plane. Upon learning that the captain delayed the flight 13 hours to capture one mouse, the Bush administration appointed him head of FEMA. Today's phrase dropping in the conversation. Tom DeLay was indicted for criminal conspiracy. Wake up, sheeple. How is he supposed to fight that? He's the Republican leader of the House. Criminal conspiracy is actually his job description.
All right.
All right.
Fun day this morning. It's Air America Radio.